All right, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of Free For All. I am your host tonight. My name is Big John. And I should actually say I'm your co-host because joining me again tonight is my co-host. See how that works? Mr. Hody Johns right there. Hode Man, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. You are too kind. Big John does 98% of the work, and so therefore I believe you deserve to get to be co-host, and I will happily be your co-pilot. That is not an offensive term when it's simply accurate. That's all. If the guy's flying the plane and I'm just making sure everybody gets their food on time, then I'll go ahead and let that guy be the pilot.
Oh, okay. Well, then Mutual Admiration Society it is then. Yeah. All right, everyone. You're watching Free For All, the Libertarian Talk Show. We're going to chop up some issues of interest, hopefully to you libertarians out there, possibly to some other folks as well. Just letting everyone know, this is found on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. You can find us on X, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook. Did I forget anything there? Facebook, yeah. So Facebook, Rumble, YouTube, and X. Wherever you are, just catch us. At any point, if you have any questions for either Hody or myself, feel free to hit up the chat room in whatever platform you're watching us, and we'll read your question. And there's a very high likelihood it'll come on the screen and Hody and I will talk about it. All right, Hody, lots of different issues to get to this week. And one of those things that I wanted to talk about is let's start off with something that almost sounds too simple to dive into, but I think it merits some discussion. And this is a topic that you brought to the table when we were doing our prep. And that's that Elon Musk has been targeting, as we know, a lot of different programs via Doge. And the truth of the matter is, I think most of us as libertarians, and you and I think, are in this camp where we say, like, good, government waste, government inefficiency, let's figure out how to put an end to that. I think we're all on board with the purpose of Doge. If there's any objections from our camps, Hody, I would venture a guess to say it's more the process by which these cuts and efficiencies are being proposed and whether they're actually being executed. Do you think that's a fair statement?
Yeah, this is one I have most of the White House back. I got a small caveat on this one, but I'm actually happy to kind of take their side on something whenever I can, right? And in this particular case, Elon Musk said something that made it seem like he was gonna cut back Social Security kind of in general. Like it was like a general statement sort of thing. And the White House very quickly was like, hey, we're not touching Social Security for people who deserve it. And so, you know, tried to kind of put a lid on it real quick. The thing is, there is a huge chunk of the Republican base that collects Social Security. So in this small window between when the White House is like, hey, calm down, everybody, town halls across the nation breaking out and people flipping, right? And and I understand why, right? They know Doge is cutting, or they believe, I guess, Doge is cutting things, true or not, but they believe that's happening. And so when they hear, hey, you're on the chopping block next, of course there's going to be a natural protest. Yeah, I would say your assessment was a little bit, is pretty fair. It was accurate. And we're not trying to overreact on this show. This is my solidarity with the anti-TDS people. I certainly don't have it in this case. I think he responded fairly. There is a brief thing we'll get to later that I kind of about, but you probably have some feelings about this as well. I know Social Security, you're not quite on that yet, but that's on the horizon for you, I hope.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll be here when I hit that age in, I don't know, about 7 minutes or so. But the truth of the matter is that this reminded me of something Milton Friedman once said, I think, when he was describing the principles of limited government to Phil Donahue on his show once. And he said, listen, everyone thinks greed exists, but everyone always thinks it's the other fellow who's greedy, not me, right? And you kind of saw it here when all of a sudden the brakes on the pro-Doge fanfare all of a sudden hit, to your point, right? Because the Republican Party of the two uniparties, I should say the two sides of the uniparty, is the older skewing of the two parties for the most part. So a significant chunk of its base is people who are either on Social Security or about to hit Social Security. And all of a sudden, I think this realization hit them, wait, they're not talking about cutting out sending money overseas. They're not talking about kicking out illegal aliens, illegal immigrants. They're talking about taking away my Social Security that I paid into. And I think a lot of this also kind of falls into a misunderstanding of what Social Security is, how it's actually funded. For example, people are, I will agree with Musk on one thing. He referred to Social Security as the world's largest Ponzi scheme, and I agree with that. I think that is a fair assessment of what Social Security is and how it operates, right? Because literally, it will be insolvent. By what's it, 2034, 2035? Like, the math is the math. You could raise the taxes on it, collect more taxes. You could put more of a burden on the younger generations coming up. But it will always be funded by future generations. So, and what's the definition of a Ponzi scheme? Later investors are used to pay off prior investors. That is legal. That is the definition of a Ponzi scheme. Although I think Jacob Hornberger said it's not even a Ponzi scheme because there's a good chance that the earlier investors never got paid what they should have if you consider market returns and things of that nature. So, yes, I think Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. The problem you have is that people have had their wealth extracted forcibly for years. And do they deserve to get what they were promised? Yeah. So there's hard decisions to be made politically. Jody, do you agree? Like, mathematically, there's no hard decision. We know Social Security is going to fail on its current path. We know it'll be insolvent, and it falls right in line with the general debt of this country, that we are a debtor nation and we have no interest in balancing budgets, getting rid of the debt, or anything similar.
Yeah, it's our second biggest expense only to Medicare. It's something we need to I guess I'll let the anarchist in me shine. We need to stop. Now, I want to be very clear about this, and this actually reflects kind of how I feel about Ukraine, that if we're going to break our treaty with them, we have to return what we took from them, right? Like, hey, here's your nukes back. Sorry, we're not going to defend you anymore. We're out of here, right? And that's where I am as an anarchist. I believe we still have to honor our contracts as best as we can. So what we say is, listen, we promised you guys Social Security. So I think if you paid it starting now, if you paid into it at all, you get the option to get it back with interest, right now. Obviously, it would be over time. We couldn't absorb that kind of hit immediately. Right. But just say, hey, you get it back with interest if you'd like, or invest in it for the rest of your life. But for everybody coming up in the future, we got to stop. I'm sorry. Like, we just – now, listen, this would mean small government, and obviously they're not going to do that. But that's what I would like to see, right, for them to kind of recognize, like, this was never set up into a private account. I mean, literally the very first – deposit there never went to the treasury. If you look at the history of it, it was obviously immediately to be paid by future payers already. It was a Ponzi scheme from the beginning. Musk scared a lot of people because I think what he said is there's $500 to $700 billion in waste, and only stated like Social Security in his initial statement. And the problem there is there's only $1.5 trillion in it. So if they cut $500 billion off of there, speaking low, that's 1/3 less payout. The other problem is and this was something that he did get called out on. I believe they fixed it on the like wall of receipts already. But they're like, look at all these people getting Social Security who didn't actually like pay. Like, they're either dead or they're not born yet or something like that. And those people were not actually receiving money. So it was a faulty. Thank goodness for the wall of receipts, because we can double check it and say like, hey, you messed up, and then we can be like, oh, we messed up. And so the White House issued an official release and said, actually, what he said was true, but then all the links they provided were in Medicare and Medicaid, showing the waste in those programs. And that's something I will say, if Musk and company want to go there, even the Government Accountability Office has recognized about $500 to $700 billion in waste there. So we wouldn't even need Doge for that. We know it's happening. Right. Yeah. And so it's just, I get why people were scared. As much as I don't trust Trump very much right now to do a lot of things right, this is one of those things I do believe. I believe we had a strong reaction to something that was never going to happen. I do not believe that Trump is going to cut this. He's a big government guy. There is no way he wants to cut Social Security. Like, well, that's no way.
I think you and I have said this before. Like, Trump's quote principles, and I use principles in quotes because I don't think he has any principles. And I don't mean that necessarily as a pejorative towards him. I just think he's a populist. And a populist will always wait to see what the poll numbers say. A populist will always wait to see how people react to these ideas, because Trump is famous for this, right? He'll float out stuff all the time. We should do this. We should do that. And he just sits back and waits. Well, if the people cheer it on, I'll do it. And if they don't cheer it on, I won't do it. And in this particular case, he saw, like, oh, wow, a significant chunk of this MAGA base is up in arms. Hey, Elon, let's pull back on the reins a little bit. You're not doing that. And then the other thing is that I think Elon Musk, and I've said this, like, while I could admire him as a businessman, I could possibly admire him as an innovator, as a visionary, whatever term you want to use, in private industry, he is not suited for public service. And the reason for that is you can't run a behemoth like the government the way you would a nimble startup. You can't run it the way you run X, where you fire 80% of the staff, and then the second you notice things failing, you'll say, okay, we'll hire people back now. We've said it. When he announced, like, that they had cut all this U.S. AID programs, and then all of a sudden someone said, well, what about that Ebola program that was designed to keep Ebola from coming to the U.S.? He goes, oh, yeah, that was a mistake. We'll restart that, right? And it makes you wonder how many of these things he does because he's just so focused on, let me cut what I think to be non-essential. And the other point was the SSA Inspector General in 2024 reported that if you look back over a 9-year period, Social Security paid out $8.6 trillion in benefits. And the identified improper payments, meaning overpayments, payments to people who shouldn't have gotten payments at all, that amount was $71.8 billion. Now, that sounds like a lot. And look, if we could save the $72 billion, let's save it. But the truth of the matter is, much like the hoopla about foreign aid, those improper payments amounted to 0.84% of the total of what was paid out. So you're literally talking about an infinitesimal amount, Hody, you know, just like with foreign aid. Hey, we cut all this money, America first, blah, blah, blah. Well, what did that amount to? Oh, 1.2%. That's what the Fed – if you eliminated all foreign aid, the impact on the federal outlay is 1.2%. So when you look at stuff like this, yes, he says stuff that gets the base energized, Hody. That these, I don't want to use the word dog whistle because that may necessarily not, you know, conjures up negative connotations, right? But even giving him the benefit of the doubt, he's using these trigger words that get the base all revved up, right? What do you think about his performance? Again, not necessarily about realized gains and realized savings and identifying stuff, but his approach to implementing these savings, his approach to identifying these cuts.
You know, I think I guess if we're talking specifically the approach, huge problems because it's not something that's sustainable. As the folks at Reason kind of noted, Trump voters, by the way, two of them, the two who are talking at Reason have noted, this is a click of a button away from anybody redoing anything that might even be undone. Because he's not undoing these things while he has control of Congress. And some of these things are not popular. He actually could be using a lot of political capital to be like, hey guys, let's cut this. Nobody likes it. It's actually bad spending. let's get rid of it. As you mentioned, like, hey, $10 billion a year is $10 billion a year. Go ahead and save it, right? But we need to get this done through the right way, through a legal, thorough investigation, not by college interns who have had like racist chat histories. You know what I mean? Like, people want to be able to trust this process, right? And so the issue that I have with the way it's being done is now people are going to see this as like, this is what happens when you try to shrink government. I mean, they're already kind of backtracking on this a little bit. That was like, yeah, I guess we tried to shrink it too fast. Whereas you and I, John, I mean, we could cut the bill in half, right? Like just by looking at things that we shouldn't be spending money on. Unfortunately, right. That's not what we're looking at here. And there's one, I actually have a question for you, but one final tidbit I wanted to give out here is that Trump pressured Johnson for an increased budget. So the continuing resolution was actually continuing of what the Speaker Johnson pushed. You remember just before Trump got elected, he pressured Johnson to give up on one bill and push for one with a higher budget. And I just want listeners to keep this number in mind. The increased spending alone compared to last year was an extra $36 billion in February. Right. So we're up to $603 billion in total spending per month. So when they find something, I just want you to remember this. I think the highest thing on the wall of receipts right now is like something for $8 million. I just want you to think of that in mind, that even if we do all the DOGE cuts, even if the new continuing resolution, which unfortunately solidified a lot of the aid that right. DOGE wanted to cut, even if we did all that stuff, we're not approaching the $36 billion that Trump is increasing in spending. And I think we're, as libertarians, we're very fair about this. We see Andrew Cuomo spend, I mean, he did this all the time in New York, right? I've saved so much money by cutting this tiny little thing. Now let's spend it on this huge, extremely expensive, and we're going to run over budget on this one. But something that I wanted to get into, we talk about a lot about criticisms. When you see Social Security and the state that it's in, the problems that we're having, especially somebody who's a little more rational than me, and I will admit that, I would like to ask you, what's kind of the libertarian solution that you want to see for Social Security? Because this is scary stuff, you know?
It is scary stuff, and I almost like take a cue from Larry Sharp on something like this, where perfect world, there should be no Social Security, right? However, it's here. There's been generations of people who have been weaned onto Social Security, right? There are people my age. I'm a libertarian, and I'm saying cut it out. Look, man, I'm 60. What happens to I've been working since I've been 18, paying into that Social Security since I've been 18. What happened to all that money, right? What happens to all that money? So, yeah, is Social Security wrong? Absolutely. But that's like saying to me, if I see the guy who mugged me with 20s falling out of his pocket, why should I not try to get those 20s back into my pocket, right? So, agreed, Social Security needs to be reformed. I would say that Social Security in particular, you start by saying, let's pick an age where people over that age no longer have to contribute, and they will no longer have their money extracted from them, okay? So that takes the burden off both the employer and the employee, right? Like, we're just the people over that age will get whatever benefits they're entitled to. They'll get paid out, and they have the option of a lump sum payment, or they continue on the plan, right? People younger than that, start planning for your retirement. Now, the magic question, because the devil's in the details, is what age would you, and I'll be the first to say, I don't know what the magic number is. I leave that to the actuarial nerds, you know, the guys who figure out, you know, when you're going to drop dead at any given moment via statistical analysis and math and all the actuarial guys. Is that age 40? Is it 35? Is it 55? I don't know. But let's pick a number. And then, okay, so that's the first thing. And then the last thing that I think should be eliminated is aid that's going to people who, for whatever reason, have no other way of staying alive. Now, that's not necessarily an anarchist or perhaps even a minarchist position, right? But the truth of the matter is that should be the last thing to go. So my sort of fear is that we're inverting the pyramid, let's get rid of the people who need it the most first, because that might be the smallest piece of it. And then we might even not even get to fixing Social Security or getting rid of it. So that's my concern. So, yeah, you know, like let's pare it down first. And I know that's not what anarchists want to hear. But if I'm going to be 100% honest, I don't care what anarchists think. I mean, we have a fundamental difference of opinion in the sense that they don't believe government should exist at all. And that's fair enough. I respect your position on that. But then, you know, you shouldn't be giving me advice as either a minarchist or a constitutionalist or a classical liberal that we still want to get this thing under control. So let's start that way. Hey, look, if we're successful, then the next step becomes even easier, which is to get rid of it entirely, right? So, look, sometimes you need a revolution, sometimes you need baby steps, and maybe this is one of those for baby steps. So I don't know if that answers your question, Hody, because, like, I'm a big proponent of just doing the simple things that get things under control, whether it's the budget. I've said this all along. In 10 years, you'd have a balanced budget if you just stopped spending. You don't even have to increase taxes. You don't have to even cut anything. If you let the American economy cook the way it has historically, just flat, keeping, not, I'm saying cutting anything, just keeping increases to zero, the budget will be balanced within 10 to 12 years. What's wrong with that? Well, what's wrong with that is the current president can never take credit for it. And future presidents will then have to figure out how to shrink the budget as opposed to keeping it flat. And that's why there's no political will for that. But like I said, if you just did that, I think you would have a balanced budget. So when you look at all these things, Hody, that's my approach. It's like cut the things that are eminently ridiculous, whatever it is, $5,000 toilet seats, whatever the old, you know, whatever the hack routines are around that. But that's the way I see it. And I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And I think you'd be surprised. I agree with you. I think the thing is I don't anarchists and don't get me wrong. Anarchists can come off as heartless, right? Like just cut it all and see what happens. And then then it's like we somehow managed to cut people's welfare, but not all the corporate subsidies. Right. Then it's like that to me is being a useful idiot as in like an anarchist. But to me, I want to move in the direction of anarchy. Anarchy is an end goal, but there's no sense in having a philosophy that's unachievable. Right. And so when I look around and I see that there's no stomach for ending Social Security, and there shouldn't be, right? Like you paid into it. You deserve it, right? Like, yeah, the person you paid spent the money and lied about it, right? Like pretended they were saving it and never did, right? But that should still be honored. Like I said, honor your contracts, right? So for me, I'll make it simple. I think just kind of I'm fine as an anarchist. I might take a little flack for this, but I would move it over just from a mandatory give it to the government to a mandatory put it in the bank, right? Mm. And then you get to touch that later. And here's the thing. These bank investments, so much higher percentages than what Social Security is paying out. So this is a better deal for the people who are on Social Security, first of all, right? And then it's a better deal. And then it's a good deal for us to kind of get on the step towards, I don't need to trust daddy government. I'm going to go to the bank instead. Oh, hey, this bank account's in my name. Maybe I can be trusted to invest for myself. So it's kind of a step into that individual direction. So you and I, Big John, I think maybe not the exact same solution, but I can certainly get down with any steps that head in that direction. I unite well with minarchists on this one, right?
Okay, fair enough.
It's just fine. Mind if I ask you a little, bring up a topic here?
Sure. Yeah,
So moving away from finance real quick, obviously we're having some kind of immigration deportation stuff hit the stories. Mm. And there's one in particular that's going around. Right. So you've probably seen the video by now. It's a tough student and it's going viral. She's been detained. And the video of her arrest is pretty shocking for most people. She is approached. The police, the officer who is in plain clothes and has no badge displayed, he's actually got a black hood on.
Yeah, I was going to say the mask, right? Yeah.
Yeah. He walks up to her, stops her. She shrieks. He grabs her wrists. He takes her cell phone out. He removes the earbuds from her ears. And he binds her hands with his hands. And other police officers who are in plain clothes surround her. Now, they actually do have the wallet on the outside, like the badge wallet thing, but she can't see it because, you know, she's being grabbed or whatever. But she gets, like, surrounded. And it's so shocking that even, like, pedestrians are like, what's going on here? What's going on? And 35 seconds into the clip, he actually announces, I'm a police officer. And he's not. He's technically immigration enforcement. But for all intents and purposes, that's when he announced that he's, like, an officer of the law, right? And she's they don't read her any rights. They don't announce what she's being detained for. They walk her off to a car, and she's out of here. Marco Rubio addressed this specifically and walked back what he said just a couple days ago, because before it was, we're sure that all these people are illegal immigrants or that they have done something that would break these things. And Marco Rubio actually made very clear it was actually just a couple of hours ago, this press conference that he did, but said, hey, we don't like what she had to say. This is about what she had to say. You have a privilege of being here, and as soon as you criticize Israel, it's our privilege to revoke that. This is not about, she wasn't violent. Like, because before with, like, Mahmoud Khalil, they argued it was violence, right? That he was somehow part of the October 7th planning and whatever they wanted to say about that. This person, they're straight up saying, and Marco Rubio went further and said, and there's a mix of people we're sending to El Salvador that are legal immigrants or legal citizens, but they are also non-productive. And that's his quote, not mine. And so that's what's going on there. As a libertarian, I find it very shocking. I wanted to see, as a human being, I find it very shocking, but I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, look, there's no other way to say this. This makes you embarrassed to be an American. It makes me embarrassed to think that there's people out there who are so ignorant of history, and even more embarrassing, ignorant of our own history, that can't see parallels to what's happening today to what's happened in the past, whether it was rounding up Japanese Americans during World War II under Executive Order 9066, no warrant, no suspicion, just, hey, you look Japanese, we're putting you in an internment camp. We're taking your property and we're locking you up. To the Know Nothing Party of the late 19th century, just like, hey, if you're Italian, German, Irish, whatever, you know, we've seen those horrible pictures. No shoes, no dogs, no Irish allowed, you know, something like that, you know, in the stores. It's horrible. The Constitution, and this is something that I'm shocked when I hear libertarians say, well, illegal aliens, not only are they a threat to this country, they have no rights. They're not American citizens. The Constitution doesn't apply to them. And I'd like to remind those people who should know better, by the way, the Constitution doesn't grant you jack squat. The Constitution says, this is what the government is not allowed to do to you. We are not allowed to silence you. We are not allowed to take away your right to bear arms. We are not allowed to house soldiers in your home, right? When you look at the Bill of Rights, that is one of the proudest pieces of legislation any civilization has a right to claim. And here we are. We're like walking up to people on suspicion of crap. And by the way, what's important here is you brought up this woman. Let me see if her name is Rumeysa Ozturk. And she's a Turkish PhD student. Okay? So you have her. You had Dr. Rasha Alawi previously here on H-1B visa legally. Same thing with this. This person is here on a student visa. What's it, an F-1 visa. So they're here. They're being productive. And odds are they're going to stay in this country. They're not inciting violence. And if they are, why aren't you adjudicating them as such? No. You're just pulling up arcane like, as far as I'm concerned, like bullcrap regulations and laws, if they are laws, that say, hey, the Secretary of State can, at his discretion or her discretion, just say, hey, your visa's been revoked. And this stuff was typically reserved for when you had suspicion of spies, when you had suspicion of people who might be spies. And these only tend to occur during wartime. And here you have people who are just being rounded up. Like, when I saw that video, Cody, it reminded me of those, those videos, those sensationalist videos you see, like, from Brazil or someplace where there's lawlessness on the street, where, like, some poor woman's walking down the street and the guy rides up on a motorcycle, throws a bag over her head and kidnaps her. And the next thing you know, they're looking for ransom. That's what that reminded me of, like these hooded thugs. I don't care if they call them cubs. They're thugs. And I'm embarrassed, man. I am embarrassed to be an American today, and I have been since this policy has been instituted. These are human beings. The Constitution absolutely applies to them. And, Hody, I'll toss it back to you since you've got me on this rant. I guess Ron Paul must be one of those lefties now. He must be one of those leftist, libtard libertarians that the Mises Caucus and LPNH all think we are, right? We're all, to use their words, actually, I won't use their words because I don't want to get us demonetized and kicked off of YouTube. But, you know, right. Hey, we're all not right libertarians. We're not hoppe libertarians. Well, guess what? Ron Paul today on his Liberty Report said what he saw was outrageous. For expressing opinions, you're going to essentially kidnap a woman off the street, no due process, and just kick her out? Horrible. Horrible. And what our friend Larry Sharp said on episode 50 when he was here with Mike Termott, he said they are picking out people who are explicitly not engaged in violence, that are only engaged in expression. And they are throwing them out to prove that they can do it, and that way no one will be able to stand up to them. Okay? That's what I think, and I'll be honest with you, I am embarrassed. I am embarrassed to call myself an American today and yesterday and tomorrow likely when you see this nonsense. Like, Hody, what did you think about that? Do you think that Ron Paul coming out and saying, this is nonsense what I'm seeing here, do you think that have any effect? Will that move the Angela McCardles? Will that move the Michael Heises? Will that move, I'm guessing, the Dave Smiths, the rest of the MAGA bootlickers? Is someone like Ron Paul, who, credit to him, kudos to him, he's calling it the way I think it should be called as a libertarian? What do you think about that?
I agree. I think Ron Paul, unfortunately, has occasionally surrounded himself by people who drag him down. I tend to like him. I think his worst controversies that he has, he's apologized for and, you know, tried to kind of move on from. I do think occasionally he surrounds himself with people that are.
And actually, Hody, I'm sorry to interrupt, Hody, but when you say the thing that he apologized for, you're talking about in his newsletter having certain staffers who were accused of racially insensitive comments, correct?
Yeah, at this point, I think LouRockwell.com is even labeled like a hate site or something, right? Like, if you try to visit it, it's like there's warnings and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, everybody kind of knows he wrote the letters, you know. But because that's just hearsay, I can't say for certain. Lou Rockwell has done plenty to discredit himself otherwise, so I don't need to pin the letters on him. But, you know, somebody used Ron Paul's name to publish abjectly racist opinions, and Ron Paul apologized for it, you know. And then that's not the only thing. He also did that, like, what was it, that, like, cultural Marxism meme that had, like, the Jewish stereotypes on it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, that was, I wasn't looking at the Jewish stereotypes. That's my bad on that one. Cultural Marxism is kind of problematic as it is, as far as, like, a libertarian talking point, but that's a different subject for a different day. I just bring this up to say that, like, I don't think Ron Paul is one of these people that I think Trump is their end game and they'll just kind of make excuses for whatever to get there. I think he's surrounded by some people that are. And as you mentioned, Angela McCardle's tripled down on this. Michael Heiss just interviewed a Holocaust denier a day ago. Like, those people are far gone, right? Like, Dave Smith saying Angela did, like, the best that you can't even quantify on a scale of 1 to 10. Her job as chair was like infinity because she got Trump elected and it's so incredible.
Right.
And, like, whatever, like, those guys, I'm giving up on those guys. But there's plenty of people I want to say that are upset with this. Let's remember that even when you know the sellout had started to occur for Trump, when the Marco Rubio endorsement was announced, like they were like, hey, we're going to select this guy for Secretary of State, that even those libertarians were like, hey, I know this isn't good, guys. Maybe we give up on domestic policy because of this selection. It's really bad. And focus more on maybe Trump being anti-war. So we kind of knew that stuff like this wasn't going to be good. And indeed, it's not good. I love your comparison to like a Brazilian cartel, where it's like a bag over their head, thrown into a car, very little explanation, and they're gone. Right. And indeed, within 2 minutes, this girl is de-cell-phoned. No electronics. Her backpack is taken. Her possessions are gone. I think it's a minute and 30 something, hauled off to a car and gone. And now people don't, like, how do we get a hold of her? I don't know. Sometimes we aren't able to get a hold of these people for like 2 weeks sometimes. This is not due process. I will keep the rest of this simple because I think the right wing is starting to see it this way. There is concern over this. And I think it's the difference between what we call the right and the far right. I don't think any right wingers are actually defending this anymore, because imagine if the Democrats get to deport and revoke the citizenship or legal residency status of anybody that they say, no due process, anybody that they say is non-productive or has an opinion that they don't like.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe Elon Musk can get deported under a Democratic administration, right?
Dream big.
right. So you're right. And look, I've said this to, it's one of my catch lines. It's like, why do politicians think politics will end once they're out of office? People have long memories in Washington. We've proven that no one can seem to be the bigger person and say, let's move on. I acknowledge we both were shitty towards each other. Let's move on. Right. Nobody seems to be that person anymore. So what do you think? Democrats are never going to get reelected? Are Democrats never going to get the chance to take this out on you? Like, what? There's no foreign-born people running around the Trump administration right now? The xenophobia, the outright bigotry that's starting to emerge from elected officials now is staggering, in my opinion. You have, and I know this is a little bit off your question, but you have, like, for example, I saw today, actually, I'll save it for the next topic. It's a segue into the next topic, so let's do it this way. There's been calls, Hody, as you know, for impeaching, quote, activist judges. What the problem with that is, though, is like impeaching someone takes a lot of effort, and actually convicting them takes a lot of effort, and you have to use up your political capital to do it, right? Plus, you'd have to go after a certain number of judges that you find objectionable. Now, here's a problem. You're starting to hear things that now tie into whether you're a good American. I saw that guy, Benny Johnson, one of these right-wing social media hacks, right? By the way, I asked Grok to tell me about Benny Johnson, and the first thing that came up is he's a known plagiarist. So that's according to Grok. He interviewed some congressman, and that guy was saying, are you aware that 30% of federal judges were not born in the U.S.? That we need an amendment to pass. We need an act to pass that only American citizens can be federal judges and rule on constitutional matters. And I said to myself, oh, wow, that was like a slick bit of like bigotry and xenophobia in one statement. 30% of judges were not born in the U.S. I think only American citizens should be federal judges. Well, that 30% doesn't speak to whether they're citizens or not. That 30%, if accurate, speaks to where they were born. So did you notice the subtlety there? If you weren't born here, you're not a citizen by definition, according to this sitting member of the House of Representatives. And this is the new tactic of the right. Like, they're all ever since they kicked out all the left-wing news sources, now we're getting the same thing as the mainstream media, except it's just coming from the right-wing hacks now. So when you get Cat Turd and DC Drano and Benny Johnson and Tim Pool and the rest of everybody who's getting their paychecks from the same source and whatever, Because you see, they'll tweet within 2 or 3 minutes of each other, and it's the exact same language. You know, like, you know, they're all on impeaching judges. And Mike Johnson said, you know what? I can't rule by executive order, so I actually have to legislate. Here's a proposed piece of legislation, Hody. Hey, we're the House of Representatives. We control the purse strings. According to Article 3 of the Constitution, we get to set up and fund the federal judiciary. So how about this? Unless you Democrat activist judges do not rule and bend the knee to Big Daddy Trump, we're going to defund the entire federal judiciary. And this has been floated as a legislative threat from Speaker Johnson. Now, tell me about this, Hody. What do you think about this? Give me two pieces. First, tell me about it as a tactic, as a threat. And then tell me about what you feel about it, if it were to be successful.
It's not much feeling to do here. Johnson has mentioned his goal. He actually said he wanted to, quote, eliminate district courts, right? Like, these are people that are standing in his way. They are doing unconstitutional things. And the courts are the primary sources blocking them from doing more unconstitutional things. We recognized this very early on when we talked about Trump's executive orders, that it's unconstitutional, but that doesn't matter until a judge rules on it. So they're getting judges to rule on these things, saying, yeah, you're not actually allowed to do these things. That's a poor reading of the law. And because of this, it's not enough to get rid of most judges or even ones that they like, because at first this was impeachment, right? The thing is they're not going to get the impeachment votes because the judges, first of all, the judges aren't wrong. But secondly, they just frankly don't have the votes. Even with the control that they have, they would need like every single one of the Republicans to stand in line. And there's many that, I mean, frankly, are not bigoted jagoffs. So they're not going to just support like overriding the Constitution to deport whoever the heck you want without due process. Like, I'm throwing some of the Republicans a bone here. They're not that idiotic, but Johnson is definitely a Trumper, right? He will bend the knee. He already showed it with the budget. I've already talked about him doing in this show, you know, so that's something that he does. His goal is to eliminate these courts. Now, as far as what you asked me, is this something possible or likely? It is possible, but once again, he's going to run into the same problem that people are going to see the issues that there would be with banning the courts, and they're not going to do it. And secondly, you got to remember, even if he actually did do it, the Democrats can do this too. And Republicans, I mean, having control of the U.S. Supreme Court and everything, wasn't that supposed to be like a big deal? Because that way we can keep firearms in our home and everything. When the Democrats try to ban our firearms, like, When all those lockdown orders got ruled unconstitutional, the right was like, yes, thank goodness for the courts. Thank goodness for the courts. It's morally a bad idea, and politically it's undoable. So right now, I think Johnson is just – I believe that he is just talking tough because he wants his constituents to know that he's licking Trump's boot, that he is all about Trump. He's going to do whatever it takes to help him, or he's going to say he's going to do whatever it takes to help him. This is the second. There are many things that MAGA proposes that I get worried about. This is another one of those things that I just kind of point and laugh. It's I looked up what he would have to do to get them actually defunded, and there's not the political willpower for it.
Well, look, like I agree with you, by the way. This is virtue signaling. But there's two things about this sort of thing. First, like you said, the political reality is even if he could get everyone in the House to fall in line, which all they need is the majority vote there, right, which they have, in the Senate, they would need to override the filibuster. So they need 60 votes. They need 7 Democrats, assuming every other Republican falls in line. And already someone like Josh Hawley, who I have no love for, I think that guy's, you know, whatever. But again, giving credit where credit is due, he said, this is the wrong approach. What we should be doing is trying to get more Republican judges into these federal court seats, right? Into these bench appointments. So at least I'll give him credit saying, hey, he's recognizing it as a bad idea. And all this, Hody, of course, has been inspired by U.S. District Judge James Boasberg. And he's the guy who said, hey, you can't just shove people on a plane and send them to El Salvadorian prisons. He's also the one who had his order, his verbal orders were disobeyed. And by the time his written order was drafted, Argentinian prisoners, the alleged gang members, were already in international airspace. So the Trump administration said, we're under no obligation to turn the plane around and come back, right? So he's already butted heads with the Trump administration. They obviously hate him for it. And what's interesting is, when I looked into this, Hody, historically, there has been the case where the judiciary has been rearranged by Congress. One was in 1913, and one was in 1982, relatively recently, certainly in my lifetime. The 1913 got rid of the Commerce Court, and those judges were redistributed to other courts. In 1982, you had a restructuring of the Court of Claims and the U.S. Court of Customs and Patent Appeals. But they weren't gotten rid of. They were just reorganized into different courts and different circuits. So this would be the first time that Congress, for non-administrative purposes, like those other two actions were more like, hey, this is sort of disorganized. We're just going to organize things a little bit better. This is the first time where, as far as I can tell from my research, this is the first time that a Speaker of the House has said, we will defund the entire Federal Circuit if you don't do what Big Daddy Trump wants. Now, that's because of rulings. That has nothing to do with administrative. That has nothing to do with cost. That simply has to do is you rendered a decision that we disagree with. That's preventing us from doing stuff that we want to do. And that, to me, is the true tragedy. And to your point, hey, if you can do it, so can the Democrats. And I said that. Look, maybe the Democrats don't want to get rid of the court system. Maybe they want to pack when they get in trouble, when they get back in power. Maybe they want to pack, 30 liberal judges onto the Supreme Court and pass that, because there's nothing that says there's got to be 9 Supreme Court justices, right? So, you know, be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it, Hody.
Yeah, it's so scary to think of what the other side could do with the power. Now, you and I, being libertarians, we're scared of all of it, right? Like, yes. Libertarians being scared, you know?
It's all terrifying.
It's all bad, right? Like, we see government growth, and we're just perpetually terrified. Yeah. Everybody else gets to take turns being terrified of it. But it's generally, because, you know, out of principle, it's the same things that we're terrified of. You know, when I see an override for an immigration rights issue and a gun rights issue, that hits the same spot in my brain. You know, like, to me, it's just the same, like, oh, this is an assault on citizens, on innocent people, right? And they could say, well, I don't like the way this guy, I mean, look at what the left does when they try to defame gun owners, right? When they say, or, you know, when they try to, or they try to justify a police killing, right? What the right wing does for those, what the left wing does for gun owners, what they did to COVID, right? Like, people that didn't want to get the shot, and the way they painted them out to be. And it's no different than what this administration is doing now with rulings that they don't like. Whenever it's something they don't like, they just want to be like, these are rapists, terrorists, whatever. The thing is it's proving that not to be the case. More and more people on the right wing are fracturing from that far right movement. And it's good for me to see. Because I do believe that I don't view the right wing as just either idiots or evil. I truly believe that many of them deep down, like, really care. I think what they see based on their media consumption is they do see things like Lake and Riley, and they're like, nobody deserves to be sexually assaulted and murdered, right? Like, nobody deserves, you know, whatever. And I just want to – I believe they have compassion. They want to cut down on that as much as possible. And they see an illegal immigrant doing that, and they're like, yeah, we need to get those people away from my kids. Like, they're very dangerous. But we're starting they deported somebody who had an autism awareness tattoo, right?
That was
it for a trend to Aragua. Unbelievable, right? Like, I went to the government's website to look what they have as a list of trend to Aragua tattoos. It's going around on social media right now. literally the Air Jordan logo and the number 23 under it is listed. Like, yeah. The stars on shoulders that, like, emo young goth girls get are listed as Trenda Aragua tattoos. They say in the website that it's to denote rank within the gang. And the leaders don't have those tattoos. Like it is just so far-fetched. These people have no idea how to identify this. They're throwing them in prisons. They're deporting them. And some of these are just like, man, that guy was a baker at this restaurant, right? Like, this guy is just a hard worker. And the right wing doesn't want to see it either. And you're starting to see some of that dissent. One of the problems, and I know I've yapped for a little bit, so I'll get back to you in a minute here. But one of the things that I really loved what the Trumpers on Reason noted is they were like, he's expending, and I think Mike Termott has noted this as well, he's expending a lot of political capital over cutting 0.1% and then putting it back in and then spending more or whatever. He's expending a lot of political capital in order to deport these people for just like free speech rights. What if he instead expended that political capital and just focused on like violent criminals? Now, right. Listen, I still would have an issue with the no due process thing, right? Like, I still would have an issue with this. I don't want to pretend like I would be appeased, but I would have no leg to stand on. Right. Because everybody would be like, oh, well, these people are like awful. Right. These people rob cars. These people rob banks. These people broke into houses. Like, how can you take their side? And everybody would be fine right. with it if there was like actual credible suspicion of these people. But when that's not happening, the issue is people are getting more and more tired of it. They're going to feel it, you know, as always the midterms tend to break against whoever's in charge or whatever because of this expenditure of political capital. And the scary part is I don't think the people who voted for Trump are going to get what they want out of this, because what they wanted was the criminals gone. And instead, and I was right on this show, by the way, Andrew Tate is walking around in America, handshaking with celebrities, just sexually assaulted his girlfriend. I'm sorry, just physically assaulted his girlfriend just like what, yesterday or something? Right, like over here. And this is an immigrant that we say, welcome, walk around, hobnob, meet people. And they're deporting your baker. They're deporting somebody who just tried to have a lemonade stand. They're deporting people who are here like just for expressing an opinion and saying free Palestine. For goodness sake. Like this
doctors
is such a,
and, yeah, doctors and, authors, and PhD students. Yeah, they're all doctors, going, you know.
This is, I don't believe this is what MAGA voted for. And as Axios showed, 10 of 13 votes. Trump voter says this is not what we voted for. And the really sad part about this is how Trump is choosing to expend his capital. Now, if he was expending his capital, say, like in the Malay way, when Malay is doing it right, like, and I have real issues with some of the things Malay does, especially socially, but in just like as far as like cutting down economics and being like, hey, I'm going to cut this. And it's going to be hard, but that's how I'm going to spend my political capital and we'll feel good later. That's great. But he is spending his political capital attacking rights, threatening to go to wars, doing trade wars, tanking the market. These are not things that Trump attacks Social Security, right? We talked about early. This is not the political capital that Republicans wanted to see Trump spend. They wanted to see him stand up to the war machine, right?
I think a lot of them did, but when it comes to these issues that are what I consider social issues, because despite what MAGA is saying, I don't view immigration as a national security threat right now, despite like the quote invading armies at our border and the quote occupying forces in our states, right? By the way, small aside, shout out to Fakeitarians. They had possibly one of the few times I've literally laughed out loud at a meme because it was bubbling in my own head, but they actually printed it, which was, did you see the Christy Nome where she went down to the prison in El Salvador and she had all these guys that they deported behind her, behind bars, and they're all standing because the way they dress them there is they're all in their underwear, right? Like just boxers and an undershirt, right? And I'm assuming it was Hudak, but I'll just say Fakeitarians for now, put up this meme where all they did was they cropped a freeze frame of her standing in front of this jail cell, and at the bottom was just the logo for Brassers. And because if you've ever seen any of those ads, it's always like every gangbang starts out with 40 guys standing in their boxers behind some chick And it just says, you know, Brazzers, guess what happens next, all right? And that's the look she had, because she's got that teased out hair, the 40 pounds of makeup. She looks, and I guess this is only pejorative if you think they're bad people, but she looks like she could be a porn star just based on appearances. And when the fake attorneys cropped that out, I busted a gut laughing out loud. Hilarious. I don't have it pulled up right now, but go to our X account and you'll see that. Okay. Last topic, because this also was something that was big in the news this week, possibly took attention away from everything else, which is the Signal controversy, Hody. Now, Signal, of course, is an end-to-end encrypted message system, chat system. Think of it sort of like WhatsApp, right, in terms of what it's supposed to accomplish. And there was this controversy because either during or immediately after the airstrikes against the Houthis, the Atlantic's editor-in-chief, Jeffrey Goldberg, said, hey, guess what? I was invited to a secure chat where all these people were talking about the strikes, the targets, planes being used, the types of missiles being used. And FYI, I was invited there. And here's the people who are in it. Secretary of Defense Hegseth. Who else was in there? Mike Waltz. The director, I think the CIA director, John Ratcliffe. So there were all these. This wasn't like a couple of generals and majors and colonels discussing stuff on this. High-ranking officials. J.D. Vance was on that list. And some of the stuff in there was a little disturbing, and I think getting lost in the aftermath. So before we get into details, Hody, tell me a little bit about this. What were your first thoughts when this broke? Did you think liberal hoax? Did you think what the hell is going on? Or did your mind drift to other potential issues with this whole situation?
I'm glad the whole thing was released. I probably wouldn't have known what to think much otherwise. The one screenshot that we had initially sickened me already, and it's probably still the feeling that I carry with most of it. And that's the one that the text of the revelation that a missile is hit. It hit a target's apartment, the girlfriend's apartment building, right, of a target, and leveled the apartment building, no survivors. And J.D. Vance immediately says, excellent. And then it says, great news. And then somebody does pound it, American flag, fire emoji. And even right. Tulsi Gabbard's like, oh, awesome. This is good news. Great to hear. It really made me sick that we killed a civilian, one civilian at the very least with the girlfriend, but everybody else in the apartment building, right? And that our leadership was like, nice, good. There is... If I were to extend maximum credit that I possibly can, I do believe that some people believe that killing civilians sometimes is necessary. I would argue it creates more war than it prevents, but I will accept that perhaps you could frame a scenario where this person is going to kill more people, innocent people, if we don't stop them now than if we stop them later, whatever. But that's to be a very solemn, remorseful decision, right? To say, right, like, I do not want to have to kill a bunch of innocent people.
We have no other choice.
Yeah, you know, but we have, right, exactly. I have to do this because it will save so many other people. There's an episode of, like, The West Wing about this, and the characters, like, just the whole time just, oh my gosh, I don't even know what to do. And the fact that ours are the people in charge of it, flippant, excite, whatever, right? Like, blew up, leveled an apartment building, great job. And then the nerve to lie about that in the news, to be like, there were no civilian deaths. You mention a civilian in the one picture we have. And then, of course, we got the rest of the text, and it got a lot worse from there. How about your thoughts, John?
It got a lot worse. And there's so many layers to this. FYI, if you want to see an expanded explanation of this, like almost a full hour, tune into this week's Liberty Lens right here on Grumbling Speed. And Mike Tremont and I spend a decent amount of time diving deep into this. But one of the things I wanted to point out, Hody, is yes, there is that revulsion But there's so many layers to this. The first one is, can we step back and understand that this was an airstrike in Yemen that Congress did not approve and the president says was necessary? Why are we accepting his word on this? When Biden does this, or when we were sending aid to Ukraine, all of MAGA was like, this is BS, man. There's no American interests there. Why are we there? Why are we sending our money there? America first, America first. Well, I would love to ask those American first people, especially J.D. Vance, what was America first about this? And what's interesting about this, before I get all the MAGA guys and the McCardles and the Heises of the world, here's the difference. It's not me saying that it had nothing to do with American interests. In that chat, J.D. Vance himself says, this is not urgent. Why do we need to do this? Can it wait at least? At least there was some discussion, which Mike Thurmond pointed out, that maybe this isn't a good idea. Do we need to do this? And then somehow in this chat, they got convinced we need to do this, okay? But as many people have pointed out, no American troops were being threatened. No American interests were being threatened. The supposed shipping lanes that needed to remain free, only 3% of what travels through there eventually ends up in the U.S., okay? Now, so vital American interests were not at stake here. So is this, again, I'm going to go back to Ron Paul. Is this something that Ron Paul would have said is a good idea? Is this something that, if you were America first, is this a good idea? I don't think it is. And that was revealed in that Signal chat. The second thing is, why has the narrative changed to what words Goldberg used to describe the chat? I've heard this say, like, ha-ha, there was nothing classified in there. There was nothing classified. Well, there was nothing classified at the time he released it, but at the time he was allowed into the chat, it was classified because you're discussing targets, you're discussing weaponry, you're discussing timing. And if it certainly wasn't announced that it was classified, then why are you upset that the guy printed it? FYI, there was the name of a CIA operative in that chat, that the CIA went to the Atlantic and said, don't print his name. And they didn't. They redacted the guy's name. So why are we pretending like this didn't happen? The whataboutism right now is off the charts, and it's for the wrong reasons. Like, it's not a matter of whether it was classified or not. By the way, it was. Just fess up and admit it. But the real problem is, who was it that invited, by the way, not a friendly reporter. You can't even make the claim that you needed coverage from a friendly reporter. This is somebody that you went out of your way to call a Trump hater. He has TDS. He's pro-Biden. He's a Democrat, blah, blah, blah. Okay, then why did you invite him into this secure chat? By the way, probably Mike Waltz. And to Mike Thurmond's point, what's Goldberg doing in Waltz's cell phone? What's Waltz doing in Goldberg's cell phone? Goldberg has refused comment as to how he has his name, has Waltz's number in his phone. Waltz is not saying anything. Why are we missed the point on that. We missed the point on whether we should be conducting air raids. First point we missed. Second point we missed is, why is nobody talking about the lack of security protocol and breach? Like, I mean, as much as you might want to defend Hegseth, and I'm not even sure he had anything directly to do with this in terms of the leak, Cody, but he opens himself up to a lot of criticism. First of all, most Republicans, he was the toughest one to get through confirmation. B, his history of alcohol abuse doesn't help him in this case, right? Hey. If I was a Democrat right now, if I was opposition, I'd be bringing up his history of alcohol abuse. And is he competent? He was never an administrator. We pointed that out. A lot of people said, hey, he was a major. He's a grunt, blah, blah, blah. We don't need these 4-star generals and 5-star generals in that role. We need real soldiers. Well, guess what? Does the real soldier take any responsibility for this? So there's a lot of these layers going on here. And then the final thing is, what do we learn from it? Tulsi Gabbard was okay with this? Wait a second. I thought libertarians were doing cartwheels over her getting the DNI role. But she wasn't going to get us into ridiculous conflicts and these worthless, not unnecessary killing of civilians. That's what I got out of it, Hody. It's not just the signal. See, I give the Trump people credit with their new mainstream media. Their MSM is the MAGA social media, right? That's their MSM because they're setting up Podcastro. They have their people at the White House. They have their people repeating the talking points that are coming out of the White House. You know, so all of them all got together. The first thing they did is, well, Democrats did the same thing. Second thing, well, Hillary, what about her server? Okay, are you justifying your actions by comparing yourself favorably to someone you called a criminal and demanded that she be locked up? So is that act okay? Or is it a bad act that you demand not to be held accountable for? Tell me which one it is. I've always hated this. When you justify your actions by quoting somebody else's shitty actions, how does that make you look good in any way? I don't get it, Hody. I don't get it. Tell me about this strategy, this distraction that's going on now.
I mean, the response has been to say 100 different excuses and hope right. that the base is dumb enough to believe them, to believe one of them, because you can't believe multiple of them. They conflict, right? Either you were hacked or it was not a big deal, right? Or, you know, any other excuses. I mean, Trump day one, I haven't heard of this. What's going on? Trump day two, oh yeah, he hacked his way into the chat. You know, excuse number three, oh, it wasn't classified anymore. Day four, oh, well, yeah, it was classified information, but I don't remember having that chat, right? We've gotten to the point it's past believability. You know, Tulsi Gabbard, unfortunately, within 24 hours committed a blatant perjury, told people there weren't, not only just were there not plans, because we could argue, like, what constitute as plans. He provided right. a schedule, targets, as well as weapons that he would use against them. But she was specifically asked in this chat, were there times, were there targets, were there weapons that you were going to use listed? And she said, no, no, no. And then the guy's like, are you not TG in the chat? And you see her eyes go wide. And then it's like, she realizes it's up, right? Like it's over for her. And then she just says she has dementia, right? Like she can't remember what country, she said she can't remember what country she was in at the time of these chats. You know, like, I mean, just blatant perjury and then doing, you know, Clintonian type stuff. Again, don't compare yourself to a bad liar to try and defend what you're doing here. It's obvious, and you wouldn't lie about it if it wasn't classified, right? They're saying we gave this information to everybody. I didn't see it. You didn't see it, John. You know, there's one guy who says, well, the signal chat was only on our personal phones, and I left my personal phone at home while I was in Moscow, so don't worry, it was never in danger. And then Tulsi Gabbard said, no, the signal chat is from the government phones. They're automatically installed on all the government phones. So they're lying. Somebody's lying, right? Like all of them are lying. We have 100 different lies, and they're hoping somebody believes it. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's a little confusion about this, and I'm willing to accept some of it as just being I kind of view it like, yeah, is Signal approved for use? I don't know the answer to that. But if two or three administrations in a row have admitted to using Signal on their phones, okay, it's one of those things that might technically be illegal, but wink, wink, it only comes up if you get caught doing something stupid. You know what I mean? So I'm willing to accept that scenario might have existed. That, to me, is less of a concern. And to me, it's less of a concern about the end-to-end encryption of Signal. I tend to think that unless someone specifically knew you were having a conversation and then devoted massive amounts of resources and intelligence to hack into that encrypted session, that's a different story. But that's not what happened here. What happened here is somebody who should have been in that chat, who was in that chat, physically added Goldberg to that chat. Now, whether they did it on purpose or it was an accident, or it was a fat fingering of, because I don't have Signal, but Mike was telling me, yeah, you just, you know, you click somebody and you add them. You know, it's not that complicated. And that's why it's preferred by a lot of people. It's very easy to add and subtract people from group chats, unlike text messenger or maybe even WhatsApp, right? So that part is more concerning to me. who was in charge of wrangling all these people onto this chat, and how did Jeffrey Goldberg get into that chat? I see, despite what the right is telling you right now, that guy did nothing wrong. Goldberg did nothing wrong. Like, if you think Assange is a hero, you should have zero negative feelings about Goldberg. He got he was like Dracula. They invited him into their lair. You know what I'm saying? It's not like he did some sneaky shit to get in there. They invited him into their lair, right? So they should be willing to accept. And Hody, how much is this almost a Nixonian case of saying the cover-up is worse than the crime?
Right, yeah, for sure. To add another layer to this, because I did catch your interview with Mike, it lists the name of the person when you add them. You can actually see that happen in the middle of these signal chats, that somebody gets added and it says their name added to the chat at this time. So somebody looked at his name, and there's a mistake that's like, oh, maybe you get like the however you have them saved on your phone or something. Yeah. You can, if you just add default, it'll be whatever your name is, right? So this guy's name added to the phone. Everybody who was in the chat at that time. Now, I don't know how many were in the chat at that time, although it is worth noting only one person is added after he joins the chat, only one other person. So that means every single other person saw this guy added to the chat and kept going, right? Now, I do want to say this, because I think that the leak, while it may be the most embarrassing and while it may be the thing that's most like impeachable, I think that the heart of this for we libertarians is what you were going on before I kind of sidetracked us a little bit about like the cover-up bit. But was this war necessary? Literally just 1 week ago, the U.S. bragged, because the Houthis claimed they attacked American warships, right? They loved to brag. And the U.S. scoffed that they haven't hit us, and when they try to shoot us, they miss us. And this is a quote, by over 100 miles. Right. They are not even close to attacking our ship. So that lets you know exactly what level of danger that the Houthis actually have posed to us. We ourselves said, LOL, you aren't even coming close to attacking us right now. Now, listen.
And importantly, Vance in that chat said, is this necessary?
Right. And Vance's rationale, because I wanted to give him credit, because when I saw that, I was like, oh, this is nice. And I wanted to give Trump a little credit, too, because Trump, he was like, I don't think Trump's aware of the implications of this, right?
Yeah, I don't think Trump's the bad guy here. As much as I would love to make him the bad guy, right. I don't think he's the bad guy here at all.
Trump did give the green light a 24-hour in the operation, as it says in the chat. They did let him know, hey, we're going to attack. He said yes. This is the surprise to nobody in the liberty movement. Dave Smith was big on Dave Smith himself was like, Trump committed a genocide in Yemen. So this is more of the same from Trump. That's right. No surprise. In fact, if you want a reason why Houthis are attacking American warships, stuff like that sure didn't help, right? So if you actually wanted to avoid these wars, which is kind of a big thing for me, is that we're trying to fight fire with fire, whereas if we stop killing their civilians, and oh, hey, John, might Yemen have some kind of ingredient I don't know that we would want to trade for? I'm trying to think of something that might be there in Yemen. Ah, forget it. Never mind. We just don't want to trade with them. But, you know, we're goods cross, troops don't. You know, that this is the kind of thing. We could fix this war in a day by just making them good trade partners, and they would be excellent trade partners, but we're not going to do that. Anyway, sidetracking that point, assuming we're going to deal with this militarily, again, not necessary. Trump was informed within 24 hours, but it's very concerning that Trump just gets this, like, he's outsourced this completely to these guys, and that the amount of discussion was very minimal. I mean, Big John, if you and I were going to, like, bomb an apartment building for the good of people, we would be up for days. I don't think I'd be able to sleep right? Like, I would just, you and I would be on coffee talking about all the details, making sure we got the right person, talking about how we can minimize the casualties and everything. Like, I think to me, it's a really embarrassing look. We tend to think of politicians as a tier above us. They're operating on information we just don't understand. They're operating on details that are just so far above our heads. And I think that that's the important part of this leak, the thing that makes it WikiLeaks-like. We want to believe that there's this high-class, intelligent, enlightened conversation that the elites have. I'll be honest, even as a libertarian, I sometimes fall for that. That I think, like, I don't like the complexity of government. I wish they'd be more transparent, but there's probably some things they do have to hide, when in reality, This is what they're debating. Why did J.D. Vance, why was he hesitant? I want to give him credit, but his problem is that, oh, only 4% of the ships that go through there are American. The other 40% are European, or 30% Europe, 40% Europe, something like that. They are the ones going to war, not us. And so what J.D. Vance's issue was, and you'll see this in the messages, not the war part. It's that he wants to make sure the messaging is spot on to say, hey, if we go to war, Europe's going to have to pay for it because we're taking care of their problem predominantly. And so even with J.D. Vance, who was the only person even slightly objecting to it, which unfortunately includes Tulsi Gabbard and stuff as well, people that we had high hopes for. Even he was like, yeah, we need to attack, but make it look good. You know, make this look good on paper. He's more concerned about selling the war than he is about doing the right thing. And that's, to me, the takeaway from this whole
thing. Well, I thought it was interesting because one of the things that, again, these right-wing MAGA guys were all parroting, I think if I'm mistaken, I'll apologize ahead of time. I thought I saw Tim Pool participate in this. He's the one that sticks out of my head. That basically they're proud to have a vice president who thinks Europe is trash. Because that came through in the chat. That Vance made his disdain for Europe perfectly evident. And I'm saying, really? That's what we're worried about amongst all this? That you have a president, a vice president who's willing to take a dump all over, a continent. Like, really? That's what we're most proud of out of this? Like you said, if he had just stopped at why do we need to do this? Can we wait a week? Can we wait a month until we figure out what's going on here? Like, I would have given him, and I do give him some credit for that. What his motivation was for that, completely different. And I don't know what that was. All right, Hody. I hope people out there have enjoyed the show so far because I'm a little talked out. I think we've rambled on enough for one episode. We've given these people their money's worth, I think, out there. So any last words before I sign off, Hody?
No, I've been having a good one. I'm Hody Johns. You can catch me at The Hode Man on Twitter or X. I'm Hody Johns on Facebook. We'll be talking, I think I'll be talking still with William Del Pilar of the I always pronounce it wrong, Red, White, and Rude podcast. We'll be talking some Assassin's Creed Shadows and perhaps some Snow White pretty soon here, which both have some, it's funny, right. Tale of two different woke things, one enjoying some success, the other definitely not. So that will be fun. That will be fun to discuss. I'm with the Love First Christians. We're a good Discord-based group. You can find those links all over my page. And we'd love to have you if you're interested in more of the how my Christianity inspires my politics. And that's what I've been up to. How about you, Big John?
Oh, Hody, I've been trying to stay away, keeping up with all the good stuff that's going on at Grumblings Media. For libertarians, there's Free For All. This show, we also got Liberty Lens with Mr. Mike Termont. That drops every Thursday, as it did yesterday. If you want to dig a little bit deeper into the Signal issue, we also have our conservative friends, William Del Pilar, G. Mangani. Check them out on Fired Up live Friday night. You can also check out The Red, White, and Rude, which is more pop culture focused. You could check out Points on the Board, which is politics and sports blending together, as well as our pure sports podcasts, Buzzer Beaters and the Blindside Blitz, one about basketball, the latter about football. I think I got them all. And you know what's even more daunting, Hody? We got more stuff in the chute getting ready to come to Grumblings Media. So everybody, check us out, grumblingsmedia.com. Check us out on all the major platforms, X, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, Getter, Gab, everywhere people can shout their opinions from the rooftops. You'll find Grumblings Media there. Until next week, where we'll be doing this again. Peace, everyone.